All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Occasionalists. Matt Pagle here once again, holding the fort down as we jump into our first official episode of Aperitif April, doing a little drink review, doing some beer. We're going to be drinking some beer today, reviewing a couple of beers that are directly related, at least one is directly related to the eclipse, and another one that is also similarly spacey, is the way I'll put it. So we are drinking some Eclipse beers on the episode today, and a very simple one for you out there, a little lightning round question for everyone out there, but very straightforward. Where will you be watching the eclipse from? Maybe a follow-up is, do you even care? It's one of the last eclipses that I'll see like directly where I live for like another 400 years, but I think it's the last North American eclipse for quite a while as well. I can't remember the exact time when a large chunk of North America will be in the path of totality again. Probably should look that up here, considering this is what we're going to jump into here in a second. But yeah, there you go. Your lightning round question. Where will you be watching the eclipse from? All right, so let's get into it. We are talking eclipse beer. And to follow up there real quickly, the next North American eclipse will be visible in the total solar eclipse, I should say, will be 2045. So you got quite a long time period. You got 21 years to plan whether or not you're going to travel down to the southern United States. It looks like it's going to be going through, essentially kind of running a line, an arc through California and Florida in 2045. So you got 21 years to prepare for that. 21 years to prepare for the next one. If you are where I am in Cleveland, Ohio, you have about 400 years to prepare for the next one. Something along those lines. I can't remember exactly. Probably get into the trivia here, because that's what we're going to do. This isn't going to be like a trivia quiz. I'm just going to throw out some eclipse trivia before we get to the actual review itself. So just some stuff that you should know about eclipse. So we'll start off with the origin of the word. It comes from the ancient Greek eclipsis, meaning the abandonment or the defection of the sun. Makes perfect sense, right? That's eclipsis, E-K-L-E-I-P-S-I-S, eclipsis. So ancient Greeks, per usual, get to name a lot of the cool science stuff. So ancient Greek eclipsis, meaning abandonment or defection of the sun. Now the oldest recording of a solar eclipse in terms of things that we have recovered at this point, there's probably some older civilization that jotted down the fact that there was an eclipse, but the oldest one that we have on record, it was an eclipse from May 26th, 1375 BCE. It was on some Babylonian clay tablets describing the solar eclipse event. Ancient Babylon, ancient Iraq, that area, would have been in the path of totality almost 3,000 years, or I guess over 3,000 years ago, or no, almost 3,000 years ago. Hold on, I got to bounce around here real quick. The earliest scientific study of a total solar eclipse took place in 1706 when... Maybe this will be my only trivia question for you. If you know who was the first one to do a full scientific study on a solar eclipse, I'll go ahead and give you, 3 seconds here to think about this one. Okay, have you thought about it? So the earliest attempt to scientifically study a total solar eclipse in 1706, when English explorer Sir Edmund Halley. Observed one from the South Atlantic. That is correct. Halley's Comet, one of the 17th and 18th centuries greatest scientific minds. Sir Edmund Halley, again, for which the Halley's Comet is named after. But he was the first to do a full study of the sun during an eclipse. I kind of wonder what that would have looked like. Exactly like what kind of tools and instruments and things you would have been using at that point in time. Okay, I got a little bit more trivia here for you. I promise we'll get into the drink reviews. The patterns of eclipses repeat every 6,585.3 days, which is 11 years, or excuse me, 18 years, 11.3 days. And this is called an eclipse cycle or the Saros cycle. Basically, the it's not that you're going to see one in the same spot every 18 years and change in a few days. It's that the type of eclipse, be it a full or a an annular eclipse, occurs at that it occurs every 18 years, 11.3 days. So, like, if there's an annular solar eclipse 1 year, 18 years, 11.3 days from now, that same type of annular solar eclipse will happen again. Is essentially what they're referring to here. So let's see here. Move on to a little more trivia. The maximum number of solar eclipses, both this includes both total and partial, that can occur in a single year, in a single calendar year, is 7. The last time this happened was 1982. What a busy year for eclipses, 1982. That would have been a very interesting scientific year for scientific study on eclipses, that's for sure. Total solar eclipses are never visible from the same place more than once every 360 years, and that's an average. And obviously, this is because of the tilt and movement of the Earth's moon. You know, obviously, the moon is not, if people are unaware, the moon isn't like sitting on the same plane as the Earth. It's got a tilted orbit. So the moon isn't, if the moon was like in a direct line with Earth, just think about it, like, you know, be it over the, you know, over the equator, or, you know, even just like a straight line going over the pole to pole, I guess, following that path. If that were the case, then solar eclipses would be more consistent. We would have them, like, I guess probably like quarterly, we would have like the same, we would have the same like full solar eclipse, like quarterly, I guess, if the moon was like on a, essentially like a straight path, or a flat plane equal to the Earth's orbit, they would happen all the time. Probably wouldn't even be quarter, probably be like, I think we'd probably have like five or probably like six a year, I think is how that would work out. I don't know. Maybe not. Could be wrong. Could be more than that. Could be like 8 or 10. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'm not a scientist. I just know that there would be more. But anyway, weather permitting, about 2/3 of all solar eclipses are total eclipses somewhere on Earth. The rest are the annular solar eclipses, the ring-shaped ones, the ones that are not complete, the ones that get close to you know, we get the partial ones, the ones where like you have like a one side is significantly bubbled up more so than the other side. Lunar eclipses can last much longer than solar eclipses, up to almost 2 hours, because the moon takes much longer to pass through the Earth's shadow. That's when we have the lunar eclipse, is when we're in the way of the moon getting any light from the sun. The longest possible total solar eclipse that can occur on Earth is 7 minutes and 32 seconds. This maximum duration happens when the moon is farther away at apogee, making its apparent size in the sky almost match perfectly with the sun. And there's some little bonus trivia here. The longest total solar eclipse can be 7 minutes and 29 seconds. The longest solar eclipse ever that we've at this point will have recorded will occur on July 16th, 2186. It will last 7 minutes and 29 seconds. So literally almost the longest it could possibly last. And this will sweep across parts. It'll be mostly in South America and towards the Caribbean as it goes through Colombia, Venezuela, and Guyana. The shortest total solar eclipse happened February 3rd, 919 CE, the Common Era, so, you know, about a little over 1,000 years ago, and it lasted just 9 seconds. 9 seconds for the totality. That's very disappointing. Probably less frightening for all the ancient peoples back then, since it only lasted for 9 seconds, but still, that would be a very disappointing one to have hover over your, you know, your city, your town, your region, you know, for the last time in, you know, roughly speaking, another 400 years. So 9 seconds on February 3rd, 919 CE, the shortest one, and then the longest one has not yet happened. It's about 100 years away, 150 years away, no, 160 years away. July 16th, 2186, and that one will last 7 minutes and 29 seconds. And then finally here, I just kind of found this interesting. I guess it does make obvious sense. It's, you know, it's physics. But an eclipse never occurs during a new moon phase because of the angle of the moon's orbit relative to the Earth and the Sun. So the solar eclipse has to happen either right before a new moon or right after a new moon. And that is it. That is your eclipse trivia. I'm sure there's more in here, and I probably said something slightly incorrectly or interpreted something slightly incorrectly, so I apologize in advance for that. Of course, I am not a scientist, even though I sound kind of like one. I speak with the authority of one. But anyway, that's it for the trivia. So let's get into the taste test, the full eclipse beer taste test. All right, so I'm sitting here with the Vanilla Blackout Stout from Great Lakes Brewing. It's a great can. I know I've mentioned this before, but I'm always a sucker for like really good alcohol advertising, especially on the box. I'll at least try something if you have something interesting on either your cans or the box that it comes in, whatever. I'll at least give it a try if it's interesting. And this is a great can. It has the phases of the eclipse basically right in the middle of the can. It's got a nice kind of sci-fi looking font to it, and obviously the date and exact time of the total eclipse too, which is pretty cool. So this is the Great Lakes Vanilla Blackout Stout. Really excited to dig into this one. Love a good stout. Stouts are heavy. It's going to be kind of like drinking your bread a little bit, but it's just fantastic. Stouts in general are fantastic. Some other little details here. 10.5% alcohol. So this will be a good way to get you started. If you're looking to get really messed up in a night, 10.5% is a good way to get it started. So let's give this a crack. Got to bring it right up here. Ooh, there we go. Get the pour going. Yeah, perfect. Oh, there's a little glugging. Oh, excellent pour. Excellent. And one of those things that is definitely very, very underrated if you do, if you are a beer drinker beyond like your Budweiser's, Miller Lights, you know, those kind of like lighter American Pilsners. If you're definitely like interested in drinking beer that is, you know, a few notches above that. And I, by the way, I have zero problem with, I will absolutely throw back some Natties, some Bud Lights with anybody if they want to. Not picky about that kind of beer whatsoever. However, if you are interested in drinking, you know, you're paying $12 in this case, I think it was like $13 for a 4-pack. If you're paying that much money, I highly recommend that you go ahead and pour it out into a glass. These kind of beers, you actually want a good head of foam on it. Not like gigantic, but you want a good head of foam on it. You want the beer to aerate so you get more of the flavor into it. So you can totally drink it out of a can. There's nothing wrong with that. I just always think it's best to go ahead and pour it directly into a glass. The best way to enjoy. So anyway, the head is settled on this one, which didn't take long because, again, stouts are quite thick. Oh, what a beaut. What a beaut here. So let's give this our first sips. Oh. Ooh. Hold on. Got to get another one. Oh, that's good. That is really, really solid. The vanilla, not that strong, can definitely give it, definitely like a hint. At least for me, it's a hint. Maybe my taste buds there are dead, but it's just a hint. But it's got that good, almost coffee flavor that you get from a stout is the way I'll describe it. But it's thick. But I was kind of surprised even as I was pouring it, and as dark as it is, obviously makes perfect sense that this particular eclipse themed stout is going to be super dark. I mean, it almost looks black.
But considering how dark it is, when I was pouring it out, it's not as thick as I was expecting. I actually kind of feel like Guinness, even in the mouthfeel, it's not as thick. I even think Guinness is a little bit thicker than something like this, but this is very, very solid. And again, the look of it is extremely, and I mean extremely dark, which, and I'm drinking it out of my skull mug, so it makes it look very ominous. But this is extremely dark, but extremely good. Let's get another nip here. Oh, solid. Very solid. Even as you're going in for more, just great mouthfeel, great taste. The flavors aren't overwhelming. Could have used, personally, could use a little bit more of the vanilla kick to it. But this is definitely a big thumbs up. Great way to get your great way to get your eclipse viewing started. 1000%. Highly recommend. Great Lakes Brewing Company's Vanilla Blackout Stout, 10.5% alcohol. I'm very curious to see when they're going to stop making these. So I don't know if this is like a limited time thing, like if it's going to be cut off by the end of April, or if they're going to go like the whole year with them. But I have a feeling that's probably it's definitely going to be like kind of a one-time thing here for Great Lakes. So if you do see it out and you're very curious about trying it, go for it. I highly recommend it. It's the Vanilla Blackout Stout. Thumbs up. Two thumbs up here from this guy because I only have two thumbs. So two thumbs up. Now, of course, when you're having a drink, you're having beer, wine, liquor, or otherwise, you got to pair it with something. You got to pair it with some food or something like that, right? Well, here at The Occasionalist, what do? We talk about pop culture and media, right? So we're going to pair each of these drinks with a little pop culture sampling here. That's what we'll call it, I guess. So starting with the Vanilla Blackout Stout, we're just going to do a song, an album, and a movie. I don't feel like we have to get too much deeper than that. Like it wouldn't make a terrible amount of sense to begin like tacking TV shows and stuff like that onto it. So we're just going to stick with a song, an album, and a movie, and I'll give you a little info as to why. So the Vanilla Blackout Stout. We're going to pair this up with a song that I wanted to stay on theme for all of these things, but I needed something that stayed on theme, but also kind of gave me that feel of like a real pub song. And because the Vanilla Blackout Stout and a lot of thicker, heavier beers like stouts and porters and things like that. That's usually what you think about when you think about like a pub beer, right? Like that's just a classic. You're in an Irish pub, an English pub, or something like that, and you're going to get some kind of big, thick, heavy stout to drink, right? You're going to get, if you're in Ireland, you're going to get yourself a Guinness or something like that. But it's going to be a heavier beer. So we need a song that kind of stays on brand for our eclipse and kind of spacey drink choices here. So what better than to go with this pub classic song from The Killers, Mr. Brightside? I mean, it's a little bit on point, but I love it. It's a great song, obviously, but I think it does pair very, very well with our eclipse choices here. So that's Mr. Brightside by The Killers is the song that we're going to pair our Vanilla Blackout Stout with. And as far as an entire album goes, there are a lot of choices here, and I feel like because we are talking about a real event that is going to take place on April 8th, that we should stick with some music that is also highlighting real events. And I have to go with one of my favorite concept albums of all time here. It's called The Race for Space by again a concept band, concept band, I guess is the best way to put it, Public Service Broadcasting. And The Race for Space highlights a number of important milestone events in the race for space between the US and Russia. And they take it's such a cool album. They take sound clips and archived sounds and stuff like that from all of these key moments in the 1960s, going all the way through the 1970s, of these like speeches and notifications and things, and other sound clips that we have, and they pair them with music to make sometimes these very inspiring songs. In fact, the lead track of the Race for Space, that's actually the titular
That's the song title, the title of the album. I don't know, I'm fucking that up right now. The Race for Space. Anyway, it's a... they use the audio from John F. Kennedy's... I think it's just called the address. Yeah, it's... you'll know the speech, but the speech is called The Address at Rice University on the Nation's Space Effort. But it is the very, very inspirational speech about, you know, the moon and the planets are there. The new hopes for knowledge and peace are there. It's a very inspiring speech that's been used in stuff like, I believe in one of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies. It was used as, used as part of like the teaser trailer. But it is one of the best speeches, maybe one of Kennedy's best speeches, and maybe for me, like maybe Kennedy's best speech of all time. But it's a great album. It highlights stuff like that, and the opening song is very, very inspirational, very cool, very moving. But you also get some stuff that's also moving, but in a very kind of ominous and dark way. They highlight in their song Fire in the Cockpit, they highlight the Apollo 1 fire disaster that killed Virgil Gus Grissom, Edward H. White, and Roger B. Chaffee in 1967. They're killed by smoke inhalation and flash flames in a really terrible disaster that if you can find the audio of them crying out that they're basically being set on fire. But the audio for this particular song is, it's a very kind of somber, the music itself is very somber. And it is the NASA, ground control or the HQ's, announcement that, all three of the astronauts were killed. So it's very, very somber, very moving, but this whole album is very, if you are into this time period, and if you are into this kind of history, maybe you're watching a TV show like For All Mankind or something like that, if you're familiar with that, this would be a really, really great album to check out. And I think a really, really great album, again, to pair up with our Vanilla Blackout Stout. And finally here, got to pair this up with one of my all-time favorite movies, and I feel like a movie that is vastly underrated from a tremendous director. And a movie that really does paint a very grim picture of where this planet is going. Again, I want to keep, for the Blackout Stout, since we are talking about an event that is really going to happen soon, I kind of wanted to stick with a movie that, while it does get fantastical, most of the science is very, very on point. It's very accurate. There are plenty of space movies that have very, very inaccurate science, but this particular movie has very accurate science, and I'm talking about Interstellar, directed of course by Christopher Nolan. I suppose because we've watched so many, we've been like exposed to so many apocalypse movies in pop culture, we have a very definitive idea that there's going to be some kind of event that just ends the world, wipes out most of the people, a nuclear war, a comet or an asteroid, some other natural event or some kind of supernatural event, whatever. The reality is it's probably going to be more like Interstellar, where we bleed to death for centuries before we actually die off. It's not going to be, again, could happen tomorrow. But more than likely the path that we are pushing ourselves down, it's going to be a slow death for the human race. And Interstellar kind of captures that, how farming and like normal things that we do are just going, it seems like it's on a rapid scale for humanity, but it really rapid scale for the individual people, but realistically it stretches out over decades, as we see from some of the recordings and stuff that Matthew McConaughey listens to, later on in the movie from his kids who are like adults. But Interstellar gets that part of the science right. And it literally gets the fantastical aspect of the science, right. When we are going to these different planets, when we're by the, I can't remember the name of the black hole. I think it's just called Gargantua, this supermassive black hole wherein traveling around it actually slows down time for you, which is a absolutely real thing. A trip down
from the planet, or down from the ship, down to the planet surrounding Gargantua, would in fact, if anyone was out of stasis, as the one astronaut does, they would age. You know, it would be like years for them, hours for the people leaving the ship and traveling. They get that right. They get the visual of the black hole, which is so gorgeous in this movie. But they get the visuals so correct that Nolan actually worked with astronomers and physicists to kind of figure out like, okay, so we want to depict this visually. How do we depict this visually? And this actually led to some breakthroughs in how we would visualize a black hole, and like the theories got clearer and clearer in how a black hole would actually look. Once we cleared up. If you were close enough to visually see the event horizon, like the accretion disk, the material that is swirling into it. You get this great stark visual of like the little ship against this massive, bright, the big dark center of the black hole, obviously, but then this massive bright disk that is, all the material that is being dragged in and spaghettified into it. And it was so accurate. In fact, they used these kind of calculations to help clean up the one of the many things. I shouldn't say it was the only thing, but one of the many things that helped clean up when we did finally get that clear radio image of what a black hole actually looks like. It was actually based on some of the work that they did that these consulting scientists did with Nolan on what a black hole would look like. And sure enough, that black hole looked exactly like what Nolan had put on film. So that's a pretty interesting little tidbit there. So anyway, went a little bit longer on this one, but we're pairing the Blackout Stout with Interstellar. So just to recap here real quickly, we are going with our song here, Mr. Brightside by The Killers, The Race for Space by Public Service Broadcasting, and finally the movie Interstellar by directed by Christopher Nolan. All right, so we're doubling down here on our beer reviews, simply because one beer tasting does not a podcast make. So I went ahead and found a companion beer to try out. And I was, I figured since we're doing Eclipse beers, that I got to stay with kind of a spacey theme. So I was looking around, and I found a couple that were kind of interesting, but I opted to go with another local brewery. Again, Great Lakes Brewery is right out of Cleveland, and I decided to go for another Cleveland brewery that's probably not quite as big outside of the area as Great Lakes is, but still a very high-quality brewery, to be sure. So I went with Market Garden Brewery's Cosmic Haze. This is a double hazy IPA, 8.5 ABV. I am drinking some very alcoholic beers. I don't think this is explicitly an Eclipse beer. Doesn't seem like it. Like I've seen some other, I've seen some other breweries that were, excuse me, I've seen some other breweries that were in the Path of Totality, and they have explicitly made Eclipse beers. I don't think this is one of them, but Cosmic Haze fits right in with the theme of this particular episode. So I figured, why not give it a rip? There's some other ones, like I said, there's some other ones I considered, but since they weren't local to Cleveland, and Cleveland is directly in the Path of Totality, I figured I had to stick with the Cleveland beers. So this is Market Garden Brewery's Cosmic Haze. Let's go ahead and crack this bad boy. Here we go. Ooh, there we go. Love that sound. Get the pour going. Perfect. Great head on it. Fantastic. Significantly, of course, it's not a stout, so significantly lighter than the Blackout Stout. But a nice, that nice classic kind of yellowy color, the color that you're thinking about is beer, but certainly a little bit darker than your typical American Pilsner. Definitely has a hazy quality to it. The name is absolutely on point. A nice hazy, yellowy kind of color to it. Good head here. smells very good. Ready to dig into this one, so let's get it. Ooh, that's good. That is very good. Crisper than I was expecting. Definitely can sort of, not that I can taste the alcohol, but this definitely has a good punch to it. That's for sure. But it's nice. It's crisp. Not very. And again, another beer that, despite just like the stout, even though it kind of a lot of times you get like double IPAs, especially hazy ones, they're sometimes thicker. This actually has like a much looser, kind of thinner mouthfeel to it. Looks a little bit lighter, even for a hazy IPA. Looks a little bit lighter than you'd be expecting. I'm going to get another sip here. Oh, that's really good. That's refreshing. Let me grab the can real quick here to get a little insight on what's in here. we got a blend of Citra, Azaka, and Trident hops. Yeah, there's some punchy yeast, apparently. Hop oils. Yeah, okay. Grapefruit, guava flavors. Can definitely feel that grapefruit coming through a little bit. But nothing, a more tropical kind of IPA. But nothing, again, kind of like the Blackout Stout, nothing is too overwhelming. I've had some hazy IPAs. I've had like grapefruit or, you know, some other kind of like citrus backing that where the citrus is very strong. This is not too strong. It's definitely just like a nice, more than a hint, maybe just like a nice little, it's a nice little slap in the butt of grapefruit. But it tastes very, very good, very refreshing. This is, and also, I'll tell you what, in terms of a companion beer, considering I just kind of grabbed this because I like the name and I wanted to stick with the Cleveland beer, this is a great sort of step down from the Blackout Stout. It's like I said, just lighter, easier drinking. Certainly, you don't want to try to make a day with one of these, with, you know, a bunch of these, but. Like a nice, smooth, easy drinking beer. Let me go in for another one here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And honestly, kind of getting better each time. I taste a little bit more each time, every time I take a sip. Another thing about beers that a lot of people kind of, probably because of our college years when we were drinking, you know, you just wanted your Bud Light or your Natty or your Keystone, whatever, as cold as possible, like basically almost like ice. You just wanted to like slug it. You just wanted something cool that you wanted to slug down as fast as possible. You don't really want, when it comes to buying, again, I'm not going to call them fancy beers, but if you're spending $12 on a 6-pack or a 4-pack or whatever, then you definitely don't want to drink these things ice cold. There is sort of like a temperature range that you want to kind of hit at, because you get more of the expression of the flavors and things when they're not, you know, at 33 degrees, essentially. There's just definitely like a little bit more. I've watched enough Bar Rescue to know that there's like an actual temperature that's preferred for beers. I want to say it's like between like 34 and like 39 degrees or whatever, but you want it in that range because more of the flavor is, again, more of the flavor is expressed when you have a little bit of air and when it's not like completely ice cold. You definitely get a little bit more of the flavor in it. So, man, this Cosmic Haze is delicious. Oh, grab another sip. This is, again, another two thumbs up for me. Because if I had three for each, I would have given them three thumbs up. But two thumbs up, I think this is definitely more of the stout is a great way to get your day started. If you're planning on drinking through the eclipse, great way to get your day started. But if you want to drink more, if you want to kind of keep it going throughout the day, you can't do those blackout stouts just continuously. So you kind of want to take a step down to something that's a little bit more crushable, a little bit easier to drink. Cosmic Haze is a great beer to kind of not drink so intensely, I guess is the way to put it. So Cosmic Haze, two thumbs up, highly recommend. All right, so we went realistic for For the vanilla blackout stout. So how about we get a little bit fantastical for the aptly named Hazy IPA Cosmic Haze. Let's get a little weird with the music and the movies and stuff here. So gotta start off with a song that one of my favorite workout songs, just a kind of reminds me of a little bit of almost a throwback to kind of the psychedelic metal era, as best defined by by Black Sabbath, some of those bands of that era, the late 60s. And this feels kind of like a throwback to it. And it does work very, very well for this kind of psychedelic, trippy kind of theme that we're going to go with for Cosmic Haze. So we are going to start off here pairing up Cosmic Haze with our song Space Lord by Monster Magnet. Not really sure, it's one of those things that's like, it's not really like, don't take it too seriously, because I'm not 1,000% sure what the entire point of this, but there are some very spacey lyrics in here. It's got a nice heavy beat to it. Like, it's just a good song. But in particular, I do love some of the lines about this man leaving his throne a million miles away. Lost his soul when he fell to Earth. My planets called me to the void of my birth. And then it just ends with a lot of space lord mother is our hook here. But we got a spacey kind of weird song that I think pairs well with this particular beverage here. So we're gonna kick it off with Space Lord by Monster Magnet. All right, now we're gonna start to get real trippy here. And our album is also the soundtrack to a short film. ? Extended music video. To me it feels much more like it's been called a short film, but to me it feels much more like a music video in a music movie video. I don't know, there's a term for this, and I know I'm kind of fucking it up right now. A movie music video, I guess. I don't know, but thinking of like Thriller and some other of those like extended length where we have like a rock opera with an actual sort of accompanying video to it, that runs the full length of the album. Well, we have something similar here, and I'm very curious. I should have looked this up to see if the album was first, if the music was first, or if this short film was first. But either way, it doesn't really matter. I'm going with the album it's the titular album for the movie Blood Machines, and by one of my favorites, Carpenter Brute. I had to sneak in some synthwave here, but Blood Machines tells the story. They're kind of hand in hand, since there are no lyrics to any of the music on Blood Machines. But basically, the tale of two bounty hunters trying to track down the soul of a derelict ship, but a group of witches, I guess space witches, does some kind of summoning ritual to protect the spirit, and then they are trying to hunt down this derelict ship spirit. Sounds fucking weird, doesn't it? I told you it's gonna get really trippy. The visuals for this the visuals for the movie are even trippier, and the music is perfectly on point with all this. Very intense. Very cosmic and dreamy at times. I'm a person that loves listening to movie scores anyway, and this is one of my more recent favorite movie scores. Again, love synthwave, so it's like right in that wheelhouse for me. But it does have a nice like up and down sort of like it adjusts and flows nicely. So I'll put it that way. It flows nicely between the more, the song, the music that would be backing a more intense scene, a fight scene, a chase scene or whatever, into the more, when we get to the more surreal stuff, like the seances and the tribe of witches and doing their things. It kind of then transitions very nicely to more spacey and kind of dreamy kind of music. So it's a really cool album. That is Blood Machines by Carpenter Brute. And how about we wrap up with our final pairing here for Cosmic Haze?
We're getting real trippy now, and what better to go with a cosmic haze beer than with a cosmic horror movie? And I am going to go with, I have to work in my boys here. I mean, just how can I not? Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson, their 2017 indie horror, cosmic horror thriller, you know, brothers at each other's necks, independent movie that deals with, again, these sort of strained family relationships put on the backdrop of something larger than us and nightmarish, you know, pulling some strings and pulling the core, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes and manipulating all of the people, including them, in a very profound, way, and in a way that makes, their squabbles, as it gets resolved in the movie, a way that makes their squabbles seem absolutely minuscule and meaningless in the grand scheme of the cosmic nightmare unfolding around them. So we are going to pair up once again, Cosmic Haze with The Endless, directed by Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson from 2017. And just to do a quick wrap up here, we are pairing Cosmic Haze up with Space Lord by Monster Magnet, the album Blood Machines by Carpenter Brute, and once again, the movie The Endless by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. So just again, to kind of give the overall picture of everything here, I think both beers are absolutely fantastic. I'm curious to, again, I mentioned that I picked Cosmic Haze. I was going to do the Vanilla Blackout Stout regardless, but I picked Cosmic Haze because I wanted to pick another Cleveland beer that had kind of a similarly spacey name. And I'm really glad with that choice. It was really, 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 really great. I am curious about some of the other ones that I had that had kind of similarly, you know, similarly space names or things that you can kind of associate with space that were not from Cleveland that I kind of want to try. But I think my kind of shot in the dark was excellent. Both beers are fantastic. I think the stout is a great starter. It's a good way to kind of get your evening revved up if you're going out for a couple of beers. Start with something that's, you know, it's delicious. You can't just like rush through it. You got to kind of enjoy it. It's a mealtime beer, right? Like it's that kind of thing. So you get your beer in you, you're feeling good. It's a good way to kind of prepare and start your evening off. You can also think of it as like a cooler weather beer. It's a fall beer, winter beer possibly. That's kind of how I think about it. More so than, I guess you could drink it outside on a hot day. I mean, you know, you can drink cold beer whenever, but it wouldn't be the first thing I would think I would reach for on a warm day. However, the Hazy IPA, the Cosmic Haze, is something that I would reach for on a hot day. This is much more crushable. You can have a few of these in a few more situations. You could drink it on a cold night, but I could imagine this being a nice, like, refreshing summer beer. You're outside, you know, grilling and chilling. You know, you just got done mowing the lawn or something. You want something refreshing to kick back and chill with. It feels like the Hazy IPA is kind of that direction you want to go with. If you're out on the beach, hanging out with your buds, Hazy IPA. You can crack a couple of those while you're doing that. So I think that's how I would rate them. The stout is a very full, excellent beer. The Hazy IPA is delicious and just a little bit more drinkable drinkable on a more regular basis than you might go with a stout. But hey, to each their own. Maybe you are a regular stout drinker. Put down a few a night when you are going out to have a good time. If that's you, well, good for you. You are a heartier drinker than me, that's for sure. That is it for this episode. That wraps it up. So once again, give these both a whirl for sure. Vanilla Blackout Stout, Cosmic Haze, the stout by Great Lakes Brewing. You know, a pillar of the American craft beer community. You know, one of the OGs. That really started up the craft beer scene back in the 80s, late 80s. And then Cosmic Haze by Market Garden Brewery, always a delicious choice.
anything from them is usually pretty solid, but really enjoyed this Cosmic Haze. So give those both a try. Hey, if you have another suggestion for a little spacey beer that you that you're going to drink on the eclipse, let us know. Reach out. You can reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook. I suppose you can reach out to us however else you can get in contact with us. I'm sure there's someone is out there stalking me. I'm positive of that. You can reach out to us however you can get to us, but I'm getting redundant here, so I'm just going to wrap this up and say thank you. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next time.